Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Monday, August 4th, 2014. Remember, as always, you could subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. You can like the podcast on Facebook. You can, if you like it, if you want to go the extra mile, it's really not that extra, but if you want to do it, you can rate the podcast. Give it a 5-star review on iTunes and Stitcher. Let everybody know why you like it. Pass it on to your friends, all that good stuff. You can follow the show on Twitter at Mundane Festival, and you can follow me, your host, Chris Lambert, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. All right. Podcast is going up late this week because I had a whirlwind weekend. You guys, right after I posted the episode 77 last week, I got a message that I could open for comedian Trevor Noah at the Arlington Cinema and Draft House in Arlington, Virginia. What's wrong with me? I'm warped. So I got that message, and so I was really excited. That Trevor Noah is a famous comedian from South Africa, and he tours all over the world. Got to work with him, and it was great. It was an awesome time. There were four shows. He sold out all four of them. A strong African contingent was in the crowd every night. It was still a good mix of people. And Chelsea Short emceed. She did her thing, and it was fun getting to meet her because I had heard her on Three Guys On. And so she was really cool, really funny. We had a good time on stage and just hanging out in the green room. Shout out to the staff at the Arlington Cinema and Draft House. When I was there last year, they had water, and they would give you any kind of drink that you wanted. But they had a cool in the little mini fridge cooler thingy. I guess you call it a cooler. Anyway, they had like Red Bulls and Coke and water and soda, all this stuff. But then they had, I'm like breaking up. It sounds like I'm crying because they had these mini Schweppes ginger ales, and it was awesome. I had a good time working those shows. Got to see my parents. Hadn't seen them in a long time. Got to hang with them a little bit. And it was a good weekend. And then that first night, I got an email from the great Hannibal Buress to do a spot on Sunday at the Knitting Factory. And anytime, like, I had reached out to him for a spot, and he got back to me, and he said, "You want to do one this Sunday?" And when Hannibal you know, hits you up, you have to respond. You should respond. And so I said, yes, I'm going to do that. And so yesterday, I recorded a podcast, Three Guys On with Randolph, Andy, and Tim Miller, who's been raising his daughter and hasn't been on a lot of episodes recently. So it was great that he was going to be on there. And I was going to get to hang out with all three of those guys and do some podcasting. So the first one's already up. So they drop their episodes on Mondays and Thursdays. So there's going to be two episodes with me on there. And they were really fun. And so I did that. We got done around 1 o'clock there. And then from then on, I was trying to make it to New Jersey so I could kind of chill a little bit before I got to the show. Got to Hannibal's show. That didn't happen because of traffic it was stop and go. There was an accident, and it was, I stopped at Sheetz in Joppa Town, Maryland. I guess they call that Joppa or Falston, something like that. I don't remember, but stopped there, got some gas, got a little something to eat. And then, yeah, I had to make the executive decision to know that I wasn't going to be able to make it home. So I just drove straight to Brooklyn and had to go through the Holland Tunnel, which took a long ass time. And I ended up getting there. I got there with time to spare, but it is what it is. Get to the show. Hannibal wasn't there. He wasn't hosting, but, Joyelle Johnson, who's a very funny comedian, she opens a lot for Hannibal. She's open for Maria Bamford. She emceed, and I went up first. And even when Hannibal isn't there, the crowd it's packed all the time. It was insane. It was a lot of people there. It was a lot of comics. They have like a little VIP section roped off. And I went up first, and let's just say Daddy had fun. I had some new bits that I was working on, a new story that I'm trying to tighten up. And I had a really good time. And everybody did well. There's a lot of comics on there. Michael Che, Noah Garden Schwartz, Brooke Van Poplin, Sarome Russell of the Decepticomics, super funny dude, originally from Georgia, but he's in the DC metro area now, and just a really super funny guy. I did a podcast with him, the Look and Listen podcast, hosted by Leonard Brothers, and we talked about comedy on that. He's just a really funny guy, man. He fucking killed. And then Aziz Ansari closed out the show, so it was really fun, man. It was a good time. I don't think I forgot anybody, but if I did, please forgive me. But it was just a fun show, so that just ended a long day, but the driving was a pain in the ass. But overall, it was fun, and it was a great way to close out an awesome weekend. I had fun at the Draft House. I got to do the Three Guys On final draft show. I got to close that out. It's in the bar area, and I did a set there. I did like 15 minutes. And had a lot of fun, man. And it's always good seeing the DC comics and hanging out with them, talking to them, catching up with them, and all that good stuff. So I had a great weekend. The podcast is late, but your loyal host was trying to work on his craft. So that is why the show is late this week. So without further ado, this is episode 78 of the Mundane Festival podcast. I have a special guest with me this week, Mr. Lucas Connolly, a comedian out of Laramie, Wyoming. Laramie, Wyoming? That's right. Laramie, Wyoming. By way of Florida, because he started stand-up in Florida. We talked a little bit about that, but we can't. Things that were a little more interesting to talk about than just telling jokes. And we had a great conversation. We're going to get to him as always. Since this is episode 78, we're going to call this episode Bruce Smith, defensive end for the Buffalo Bills primarily and for the Washington Redskins. Bruce Smith, Tech Mobile legend. Ooh, yeah. All right. Bruce Smith was born on June 18th, 1963 in Norfolk, Virginia, standing at 6 feet, 4 inches, weighing in at 265 pounds, graduated from Norfolk, Washington High School in Norfolk, Virginia. I don't know. Wiki does like weird stuff when they put the kid people's high school. Anyway, went to Virginia Tech, drafted as the first pick in the first round in 1985, debuted with the Buffalo Bills, last played in 2003 with the Washington Redskins. Career highlights and awards: 11-time Pro Bowl selection, nine-time first-team All-Pro selection, two-time second-team All-Pro selection, four-time AFC champion, 1980s All-Decade team, 1990s All-Decade team, two-time Associated Press Defensive Player of the Year, three-time PFWA Defensive Player of the Year, two-time NEA Defensive Player of the Year, four-time UPI AFC Defensive Player of the Year, Pro Bowl MVP in 1987, Buffalo Bills Wall of Fame, two-time All-America member, 1983, 1984, 1984 Outland Trophy winner, and Hall of Fame inductee, NFL record 200 career sacks, played in 279 games, 1,225 tackles, sacks 200, fumbles recovered 15, two interceptions, one touchdown, Hall of Famer, man, 2009 Pro Football Hall of Fame inductee. So there you go. Episode 78, episode Bruce Smith, talking to Mr. Lucas Connolly. We'll get to him a little later. I just wanted to say, I have some plugs for you. Tomorrow I'm going to be at the Eastville Comedy Club in New York City at 9:00 PM. Little Skips on August 7th at 9:00 PM. I'll be at the Brit Pack Theater in downtown, near Chinatown, downtown area, in New York City. That's on Lafayette Street. Tandem Bar, August 13th, 9:30 PM. UCB East, 11:30. What is wrong with me? I'm sorry, you guys. It sounds like I'm crying while I'm reading my plugs. I'm excited about them. I'm not sad. All right. UCB East, August 23rd, 11:30 PM. August 27th, I'll be at Over the Eight in Brooklyn, New York at 8:00 PM. And the big show, Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014. I'm headlining Caroline's on Broadway at 7:30 PM. Get your tickets on the website. Use the code BREAKOUT for cheap tickets. They're $5.50. If you want to pay $16, go right ahead. I don't care. I just want to see your beautiful faces, but I also want you to get the value. So there you go. Caroline's on Broadway, 7:30 PM. All those shows. It's going to be fun. And I'm excited. All right. I didn't really see any movies. I didn't go to the theater. I'm going to try to do that this week. I was thinking about, I need to renew my AMC Stubbs card because that's going to expire tomorrow. So I got to renew that so I don't lose the money that I have on the card, like to get my points and stuff. So thinking about seeing the Get On Up, and I want to see Guardians of the Galaxy. Everybody's been raving over that. And I want to see Boyhood, and I want to see Ninja Turtles. And but I haven't seen anything since Wish I Was Here. So that was about 2 or 3 weeks ago. But I did rent a movie on demand, Life Itself, which is a documentary about the life of Roger Ebert, great American film critic. And it was really good. It was directed by Steve James, who directed Hoop Dreams, which is just an amazing documentary, but it's just an amazing film. So he directed that, and it was really good. If you're a fan of movies, you should see this movie. It's on demand in whatever outlet you have. Like I'm sure it's probably on iTunes or something like that. But if you have video on demand, you can check it out in the comfort of your own home. I see looking on like the search page on Google. It's on Google Play. It's like $6.99 and on Vudu. So, I mean, if you're in, you have Google Play and Vudu, you can see it. But it's just, it's really good. It talks about his relationship with his wife, with Gene Siskel, how they had an interesting relationship, but they had some stuff behind the scenes that's really funny. It's just really good. I highly recommend it if you're a film lover. Okay, so we're going to get to Lucas Connolly. A couple of things I wanted to say before we talk to him. We started off the show. I had a show in on the Lower East Side last week, and he came through. We were scheduled to do something Saturday, but I had the shows at the Draft House, and so I said, "Hey, man, I'm going to be in the Lower East Side. I got a show at Cake Shop. Come through. We did it in my car." So he was the first person to record a podcast in the new ride. And we talked about hip hop. We nerded out on like indie hip hop. He mentioned his all time favorite producer, this guy named LP. And when he said it, I said, he sounds vaguely familiar. And then when maybe a day or two later, I see one of my rapper buddies, JB from Oklahoma. He did the Sway in the Morning show, and he did a freestyle, and then he played one of his records. One of his records called Stephanie, and it's from his album Everything Was Beautiful and Nothing Hurt, which is his album on Murs's label. And LP produced that song. So I was like, oh, shit. So I had to tell Lucas that I have heard of LP, and I am kind of cool because I know who he is, and I know one of the guys that he's worked with before. So and I actually ran into Lucas last night. He was at the Knitting Factory, and I was telling him about LP. And we were talking about the best rap album of the year. I was, you know, and I couldn't really think, you know, I talked about Schoolboy Q. I like Schoolboy Q's album. I really haven't been listening to a lot of the hip hop that I've been listening to. I was having a conversation with a buddy about this a couple of days ago. I've been listening to stuff from like 2, 3, 5 years ago. Just in a mix, like on shuffle, like a hip hop mix on my iTunes. And I forgot to mention Pharoah Monch. And you guys remember I raved about him less than a month ago or earlier this summer, just like how I slept on his stuff. Pharoah Monch, Schoolboy Q. What's the name of Schoolboy's? Oxymoron is Schoolboy Q's album. Common's album is good, but I just haven't been listening to a lot of hip hop. It's mainly like I listen to a lot of podcasts. And what else? And I've been listening to St. Vincent a lot. But anyway, so we talked about that, and a lot of good stuff. And Lucas, I met Lucas. I want to say I met him last year at Little Skips when we were doing shows back there, which is the Big Up show that I'm doing this week. We met there, but then we did a show. We did the Emily show a couple weeks ago at 2A, and we were just talking after the show, and he's talking to me about all this stuff, and I'm like, dude, I gotta have you on the podcast. So we locked it down, and we had a great conversation. So here is me talking to the very funny, very interesting Lucas Connolly.
I guess that's something that you normally see in the Lower East Side. People with just, I just don't know how you can interact with people with that, how you can get people to take you seriously.
Yeah, like it's especially that, like I'm okay with a nose piercing, but like one that's like especially looks like African tribes
yeah.
stuff. I just get mad. Same with tribal tattoos. I'm just like, you're not part of that tribe.
You're next to a place that has artisanal bread.
Yeah, exactly. The, you know, every font is in Helvetica right now. Come on.
It's, I mean, more power to them. Like, I'm not judging, but right. I think in this specific area, like the Lower East Side where we're at now, I mean, it's not an anathema, if I were to use an SAT Ooh. Word, like a big, oh yeah,
can you give me out. Can you give me the three definitions of that word?
Well, it's like, it's not out of place. It's not like, if memory serves me correct, it's not like, whoa, what's this guy doing dressed like that?
Right, absolutely, you know, yeah.
It's in, like, it's, we're hanging out in my car. You're the first person to do the podcast, Lucas, in my new car.
This thing is nice. I was thinking that when I sat down. I was like, this smells good. There's something I love about a new car smell.
Well, thanks, man. It's used. But yeah. it's new for me. It's a 2013. I had to get rid of my old truck.
I don't know. Maybe it's that just extreme clean that you get when you buy something.
And then I got the, you know,
the piney.
If there was a dead body in here, I wouldn't know because they did a great job cleaning.
Right.
So you were mentioning earlier. You said you're not a big sports guy, but you're MMA. You're in the MMA.
I really like it. I'm gonna be honest. I don't like watching it live. I don't like going to any of the events. I don't like going to any bar where it's playing live.
Okay, why is that?
People want to fight. People who watch fighting like fighting, and me, I just like watching it.
Yeah,
I just like watching it. So like, I will wait till the next day.
Oh, so you don't get, even if you found out who won, you don't care. You just,
I don't care. I liked watching it.
Okay.
Like when I was younger, I was in karate.
So was I. Yeah.
And I was not good at it. I didn't. You know. I just wasn't, man. I didn't have the discipline for any of it.
It does take discipline. Yeah. I quit. I started when I was 5. Ended when I was 9.
You know what the worst part about karate is that you don't know it's just dancing. It's just they're just teaching you how to dance.
Was it Taekwondo that you took?
No, I was saying karate.
But it's still like, what style? Then there are different styles.
I don't know. Maybe it was Kenpo?
Okay.
Kenpo karate. And so what they would do is you'd learn all these katas. And when you think about it in retrospect, if you just did that kata faster, that would be a dance.
Well, that's essential. We used to call Taekwondo, they called it form. It was just your form.
Right, and then exactly.
You would get your test. You would do, like, if you were a black belt, it was basically like a big audition.
Right.
And I took Junri Karate in the Maryland, D.C. area. And when you would have your test, Junri would come to your school. And you would basically be audited by him. And I remember when I was a black belt. I was getting my first degree black belt. I had to remember all of the forms. I had to remember all of those, and then the new shit that I had to do.
So like, you had to do like the easiest mm-hmm. kata kind of stuff of all time, where you're like, really punch, 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 step forward.
Yep.
And then the next one was like, way a little more complicated, and then by the end you were doing like jump kicks and stuff.
Yeah, doing all the crazy stuff.
Yeah, I always wish, I always wish I got like a little farther.
How far did you get?
It's like 3 years or something.
What belt was that in?
I think I was in orange or blue or something like that. Was
okay, like, I don't remember the or. I know it was, God, Nobi started out as a no belt, white belt, blue, green. I think there's an orange.
Right. You know what the weird thing was that we had, like, strips on it, too. So you'd be, like, three.
First degree.
Yeah, so you'd be, like, three stripes for, like, you know what I mean? You'd go first degree, second degree, blue belt. And it's so weird because you put more degrees on it and it always feels like it's way better than, even if you're, like, a third degree blue belt, you're like, oh, that's way better than a black belt, right?
It's like a caste system.
Yeah.
It was like, or like a, what do you call it? Oh my God! What's all the people in Hollywood? Scientology type thing.
Yeah, like you have to work up the levels. Yeah, it's weird.
When I wanted to quit, my dad was pissed.
I bet.
He put so much money into it. And when my dad did the show last year. And he was like, yeah, because I felt like if you quit, you're going to quit at everything.
Mm.
But I wanted to play football. And
see, like, going to football from karate, that's, like, so cool. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, unlike me, it was like, I'm going to quit doing that and get in the StarCraft. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so lame. Shit. You know what
was
I mean?
Was that around back
Oh,
then?
Yeah, StarCraft 1, man.
How old are you?
I'm 28.
Okay, so I got 6 years on you.
What?
34. Okay.
So StarCraft, we would play in my friend's basement, and we'd have two computers in the basement.
So you were heavy in the computer game.
Yes.
And not consoles.
Yeah, I like strategy. I like strategy games.
RPGs.
And I like fairness, which is why StarCraft is, I like still watch it today. It's very fair. It's like chess. It's like, who wins is the best player.
So are you're playing against other people, or are you playing against like the computer, like the whatever the storyline is laid out?
Like there's a main quest, but like you get through that in like maybe a week.
Okay.
And then after that you're playing people online. And mostly
gotcha.
And now esports, like stuff like that, like those Korean people make millions of dollars. A year.
Those competitions and
stuff. Those competitions, man, they make a lot of money.
Like, they go to these, like, convention halls in a hotel.
Yes.
And they just take it over for a weekend, and it's, yeah.
And the worst part is, like, second place is, like, you basically get your money back, or, like, you get, like, a couple $1,000.
Wow.
And then third, probably through 10, you just get your money back. And then everybody else just loses their cash.
That's like you. Now you have me thinking of The Wizard. You remember that movie?
Wizards?
You might be too young.
Oh, the video game movie.
Video game movie, Fred Savage.
Where he gets the flute, right?
And he was played Super Mario 3 was the last game.
Yeah.
Dude, I went back and watched that. I think it was on HBO or something at least 2 or 3 years ago. I fucking cried. I got emotional, man. I didn't realize, you know, when you're a kid, it's just like, oh, they're playing Super Mario 3. That's awesome. But I didn't realize that, you know, the brother was autistic or whatever. The one, the little twin sister died, and he wanted to go to that little dinosaur place, like on somewhere on the outskirts of Las Vegas.
Right.
It was like really emotional, man.
No, it was one of those movies that it was layered, and you could feel. I remember watching it with, I think, my parents, and I thought to myself that they felt tense in the movie, like they were uncomfortable about how it was. Like,
yeah,
like I feel like that's the like those are always the best.
That was some real shit too, because the parents were divorced.
Yes,
and what wasn't the mom was already with somebody.
Right.
And the dad was, you know, he had his own business and all that shit.
Yeah, they were just very unlikable parents, kind of, too.
Do you think they were unlikable? Or they were just trying? It seemed like they were trying.
I feel like it was like this. It was like they just didn't believe.
In the
autistic kid.
Oh, okay. And so it was sort of like a... sort of like a Rain Man Jr.
Yeah, it was kind of except they won nothing from it.
Yeah,
you know, but like
wow.
But yeah, that it was so weird. It was such a weird wow when you think about that movie.
Woo-wee. Yeah, that is like the you know, and then one of my favorite singers is in that movie. The girl was played by Jenny Lewis, who's one of my favorite. She's Rilo Kiley. Her album literally just came out today, and she's.
Didn't she do something with the twins?
The Watson twins.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I know my a little indie rock a little bit.
She was the first, she was like one of the first people that I got into, because before then, like, I was more like an R&B,
right,
indie hip-hop guy, like in college, that's what I was listening to, and I want to say around like 05 or 06,
yep.
I just kind of got a little disenchanted by that genre.
Yes.
And then I remember I was living in Chicago at the time, and they had this publication called The Red Eye, and they had like a little blurb on her album, The Rabbit Fur Coat, with the Watson twins.
Right.
And I was like, okay, she looks cool. I'm going to check her out. Click. Went to the record store, bought it, loved it, got the Rilo Kiley stuff, And just, I saw her live. This might have been 06 or 07. She's terrific. Great.
Terrific.
Yeah.
I remember in 2005, I was almost on the same path. So, through college, Del, as the Deltron and Aesop Rock and all that, all that kind of like.
So really indie.
Really indie.
Yeah.
Hip hop. Like, so into it. And then I found out about torrenting stuff. And literally, I just started downloading, clicking every single thing that had 1,000 people downloading it.
Okay.
Because I went, why not?
Who were you getting?
I got all the things that, like, have became bigger bands. So, like, Arcade Fire.
Yeah.
We got Animal Collectives.
Yeah.
We got the Black Keys, I believe, right then. And I just started going click, click, click,
What year are we talking?
This is, like, 2005, exactly.
05, okay.
The exact same time.
Yeah.
But it was not necessarily about, I didn't care. It, like, grew out of, like, being part of a scene.
What people thought was cool.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I was like, I don't... You know what it was? When you get so obscure into, like, a hip-hop thing, Nobody knows.
Yeah.
No one knows how to talk to you, so...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's true. Like, you know, what started it for me was, I would say maybe, like, when I was in eighth grade, I was listening to Fresh Prince.
Right.
And I was listening to, like, West Coast hip-hop, like, Snoop. Warren G, all that stuff. And then, like, high school was sort of like, oh, what about these New York guys like Eric Sermon, Redman, Method Man,
Wu-Tang.
Keith Murray, Wu-Tang, all of that. And then, like, I just started, always loved Tribe Called Quest.
Oh, they're so good.
And so, like, those guys, I would say Q-Tip and Fife and Alicia E. Muhammad, they were, like, the foundation to most of the people that I really, really like. So then, like, it was more like in college, it became like listening to Nas, like, really enjoying Nas.
Yes.
But then it was like Mos Def and Talib Kweli, like the Black Star stuff.
That's the stuff I got. Like,
yeah.
So when I got in, it was J5.
Okay. Yeah.
It was The Roots.
Right.
That Phrenology album.
Oh, yeah.
Which was like, that was like the album where I was like, oh, heck. I really like, and that was like a little bit of like a punk rock metal kid before it.
A lot of people did. A lot of, I liked it. What was we're talking like what, 03, 04 maybe?
Yeah, exactly.
I liked that album, but I think when they came back with The Tipping Point, I think that came a little.
Everyone agreed with that.
Yeah,
everyone agrees with that. But for me, it was palatable. It was for my same with that Speaker Box album, like with Outkast. It just My punk rock kind of rock brain needed to get a little bit like a foot in where they're like,
okay.
Just need to get a gradual in.
See that, like, I thought that, I think Outkast is really cool. I've always liked them and respected them, but it was weird because Q-Tip had an album that was similar to The Love Below. He had that record, it wasn't Amplified. It was Kamal the Abstract, and it got shelved. And he was singing. He had like interesting production, and that got shelved. But like Andre 3000, like, oh my god, it was great. You know, like everybody was like jerking off to that album, but nobody, you know, like Q-Tip shit got shelved. And then like, but Andre sort of, I guess, ushered in. He was one of those guys that made like. Not singing so great, cool.
I think it's more of this. It's the Picasso theory. He showed everyone he knew how to rap first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he goes, look, I'm going to do something else. And they're like, well, we already like you.
Why are you changing it?
Well, it was more of this. Picasso knew how to paint. Picasso painted all these realism paintings.
Okay.
And then eventually was like, I'm going to start doing all this weird cubism stuff. And everyone was like, okay.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I know Pharrell. No, we could say around. God, when did the first Nerd album come out?
Was that
I think I was just graduating from college, so like 02.
Yes.
01, 02.
Right? Wasn't it with near? And then all right, so. It was Clips album is 2005, so it had to be.
Was it 2005?
No, not the first one.
Like 03.
No, the one that's all hits, the Hell Hath No Fury.
Okay, yeah.
That's the one that's just like that's maybe I always consider that is maybe the last good full album of hip hop, maybe.
Really?
A full.
You thought Hell Hath No Fury was better than Lord Willing?
Which one's the one that has Womp Womp? What You Do? Which that one?
Womp Womp. What? That's got to be Hell Hath No Fury.
Yeah.
So you're saying that's better than Grinding? Ooh, I don't know, dude. I got to go back and listen to Hell Hath No Fury.
What I'm saying is not.
It's
not
no
even
judgment.
That.
It's just you right. Had me thinking about it.
No, this is what I'm saying. There's all that now. What they do is they just have like 25 producers.
Yeah.
Right? And then they send all the tracks in, and everyone sends in 10 tracks.
Yeah.
And then they choose which one tracks because of whatever. What was that? Premiere did that album.
Yeah.
Where it had all those records, like all the producers on it. And it was, what was the name of that album?
I don't know.
That everyone flipped out about. This is like the best. People were like, this is the best hip hop album of all time. Mm-hmm. And then literally, then everyone was like, oh, we should just get as many producers as we can.
Yeah.
And this consolidated product of an album disappeared, and now there's just 4 hits on CDs.
That's true. I mean, like, recently, see, now you got me thinking about a bunch of other stuff. I was, when you talk, as far as, like, the one producer thing goes, I would say, you ever heard of Exile?
Oh, it sounds very familiar.
You heard of Blue from L.A.?
Was he part of, the Aristic, what was the guy? It was with, like, AC Alone and all those guys, and, like, they all talk about coke. Were they coke rapper?
No, Blue is just like, he's more along the lines. I would call him like a. Do you know who Murs is?
Love him. So.
Murs is sort of like a West Coast common, kind of like in the same. He does right. A lot of stuff with Ninth Wonder. Blue is sort of like in that same vein where he did this album called Below the Heavens that came out in 2007 or whatever, and you gotta let the meter maids know that you're legit. So Below the Heavens came out in 2007. It was produced solely by this guy named Exile, and it's a terrific, like, one of the best debut albums to me of this millennium. Hip hop records. You know, it's like him talking about growing up in L.A., being,
right.
You know, trying to make it in the industry, not being rich, trying to take a girl out, being broke. And he also did the same with this guy named Fat Sean, who had this album called Boy Meets World. And I want to say that was 2008, 2009. And it was just that you could tell that it was a cohesive project that had a through line from beginning, middle, and end.
Right.
And it was just... it was fantastic. And I think Fat Sean just signed with Nas's new label.
Oh, that's great. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like I loved Eminem when I was, you know what I mean? I love that stuff. But now you listen to Eminem tracks and albums, and you're just like, man, 3 good songs?
Oh, okay.
14 in tracks, 3 good songs, man.
A lot of people are doing like 10 or 11 tracks now.
Right, but there's only 2 that are good.
That, you know,
makes me want to steal it, you know? I'm like, why would I steal a full album?
I'm trying to think of what's my favorite hip-hop album of this year? I mean, the Schoolboy Q was good. That's really,
Run the Jewels. It has to be.
That was, wasn't that last year, though?
Is that, maybe. If it's not, if it is, then it's
recent, right?
It's whatever, in the last year. From a year ago, it definitely came out. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in the 2000.
Because then they had like a Run the Jewels tour. Right?
They did.
Is that Killer Mike?
That's Killer Mike and LP from Definitive Jux.
Jesus, man. See, you got my... I didn't know we were going to go here.
I'm sorry.
No, but you got me thinking, like what... God, like, you know, my favorite album, period, right now is the St. Vincent album.
Ooh.
And, like, that to me is just, like, it's just so layered, and it's like, the more I listen to it, the more immersed I get in it. That came out February, and I'm not, you know, the Common album is good. That just came
sure.
out. I like what he's doing, but he has a couple songs, one or two songs that are a little bit, like, what are you doing? Like, well, it's like, were you trying to have a club banger?
Yeah. See, I feel like
you're
that's
42.
Yeah. like, literally, sometimes I, like, think to myself, and I, like, never want to express it about, like, how much I loved Jay-Z when he did that album with Linkin Park.
Okay.
Like, I just thought it was interesting. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, in my mind, I was like, it's at least interesting. It's, like a new version.
Yeah.
Not that, like, it was even that good, but in my brain, it just goes, at least that's new.
One of my favorite Jay-Z records would be, I would say albums would be, I like the Unplugged. I like the Unplugged.
Yeah, that's cool. That's
I like the Black Album.
Right, like that's the best I think of Jay. But like I think about weirdness sometimes where you have to like put an innovation mm-hmm. into skit like part of it. Like
yeah.
My favorite album of like all hip hop is and it's basically been the same forever is that Cannibal Ox Cold Vein. All right, so it's they're New York guys. They are from Definitive Jux, which is LP.
I know them, yeah.
Right? And it's Vast Air and a guy named Mongol or something like that. And LP does the best production of maybe of all time. And I feel like everybody has been trying to imitate it for years.
You gotta shoot me some links.
I'm gonna get you in there.
I just know a little bit of Def Jux. I don't know. Didn't they have an album called like? It was like an album cover where it was a bunch. It was like a collabo album, and they were like on a baseball diamond.
Yeah, Company Flow, right?
Yeah. Okay. See, yeah, I know like, a little bit.
Right. Like, so that's the problem is like when you get so obsessed.
Yeah.
And that's why I had to start clicking on those indie bands.
Okay.
Click, click, click. Get the note Bright Eyes and Cat Power and some stuff. I just wanted to be able to talk to people. I literally felt like I was, like, isolating myself. And to be honest, like I had a few black friends, but, like, even they were not into it the way I was into this.
When I was in Chicago, I was doing theater, and I went to theater school out there. There weren't too many people that I hung around that were just, like, really into hip-hop, let alone music in general. You know, like, they would say, like, you know, somebody... I was doing a play, and somebody put me on the Cody Chestnut's first album, the Headphone Masterpiece. Other than that, it was really the stuff that I had on my own. And one of my best friends, he was in Atlanta, so we would always talk on the phone. He'd say, oh, you got to check this out. He would send me stuff. But really... nobody really cared too much.
Yeah.
You know, I would go to House of Blues and go to shows.
What I always was, too, is like, everyone wants to teach, no one wants to learn.
That's true.
So I would be like, hey, why don't you find out this? And then, someone would be like, I remember this was a couple years ago, and it was so frustrating. Like, I was like, hey, check out this. And they're like, have you heard Tyler, the Creator? And I was like, come on.
Because everybody knows him.
Yeah. I'm like, the guy that's famous.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, that's true. I mean, I just sort of like, God. Yeah, I like the stuff that he does. I mean, you could tell he's influenced by Pharrell and Chad. I dig a lot of this. It's a lot. You know, you just kind of find like, oh, this guy worked with Tyler, oh, I'll check him out. Or this guy worked with Pharrell, or this guy did a track on Def Jux. Maybe I'll check. That's kind
exactly. of how I was. Like, no, I always just was like, I just never got that. It's so funny how he is. If you put him in white face paint,
who, Tyler?
Tyler, in white face paint, he'd be an ICP person that would play in ICP shows.
Who was saying? Somebody said they're. Some music critic was saying like that Odd Future movement is like punk rock. They're more like punk rock. They're like kind of like an Onyx or the Grave Diggers, which I really
love Grave Diggers.
I don't know that much about them, but very like like I'm sounding like a douche, like kind of macabre. Yeah, I like it. They're not making music for me.
No,
because I'm 34.
Right. Yeah.
But I can appreciate what they what they bring to the table.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. I think that's the thing. Unless you're poor and angry,
mm-hmm.
that's not for you.
Well, those kids. I mean, they're they're suburbanites. Like you, if you look on YouTube clips, like they're not wealthy or anything. But I know like Tyler was living with his grandmother,
right?
And they
right.
they would show clips of them skateboarding.
Yeah, you know? The traditional storytelling of rap is disappearing, and to be honest, it's changing with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Movies, stand up, people are just getting away from traditional stories.
And that's I'm trying to work. I'm preparing to do an hour at Caroline's, and I was thinking about adding a story that I've told on podcasts before, but I was trying to like add some theatricality, you know, try to make it. And it's just like, yeah, like it's something that I'm like, I started to listen to more comics that sort of have like that one man show turn to it. Like Bill Burr's last special, to me, amazing stand up, but there were some moments that were like, to me, he's one of my favorites, but like there was like an other, to nerd out a little bit, otherworldly part of where it's like, oh, this is like a one man show. It's like what Pryor would do when he would turn into Mudbone and he'd do these other characters. But yeah, like you, I think you're right. I think it seems like we're running out of stories to tell because we're telling the same shit over and over. It, that's what Hollywood's going, you know.
Right.
It's what Hollywood's doing.
Like I got this thing. Someone was like, "Hey, I want to see your scripts." I go, "I don't have any scripts. I do stand up." Like it reminded me of that old Mitch Hedberg joke, right?
Yeah.
And like I was like, "Oh, that's so funny because I don't have anything," right? And he's like, "Oh, well, when you do, send them my way." I'm like, "Oh God, I should probably do this as quickly as I can." But I started reading, and if you look, almost every sitcom, every comedy sitcom has the exact same episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's an episode where somebody gets locked into a small area. Like, if they're, like, locked into a building and they don't get to be, they don't get let out, or they get locked into an elevator.
Yeah. They call those bottle episodes.
Yeah.
Where you can't, it's only filmed in one place, maybe because the budget won't allow for it. Community did. They might have done more than one, but it was one where they were just in the study hall. They're just in the library the whole time.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like those kind of episodes, they're in every sitcom.
It's just like one set because we're out of budget.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like weird, and so like now people are just literally now you're just like, I just develop the characters and I just steal.
Yeah. What shows are you watching? What are you into in this muckety muck of like,
so much going on?
Homogenous bullshit that's going on, man.
I'm gonna be honest, man. I really just get into cartoons mostly nowadays. When I watch a lot of times, I just need to tune out. So I love Rick and Morty.
Okay, I've heard of it. Don't really know much.
It's Dan Harmon from Community.
Okay,
did it. After they basically kicked him off from Community, he started doing his own project. And it's basically, what if in Back to the Future, if the Doc was evil and McFly was stupid?
So that's what it's based off that?
It's literally evil...
Oh, it's literally that.
It's basically that. It's like an evil scientist going through in space-time.
What channel? What does that come on?
Adult Swim.
Okay.
So that's like, I watch a lot of that stuff. Like, a lot of, like, I feel like that's the future. Is like, there's not going to be as many, like, super celebs. I feel like.
Super celebs?
It's like people that are like.
Super, yeah.
There's just going to be these minor celebrities are in your view.
Yeah, you know, you see a lot of, people doing, look at her, look at that guy.
Dude, that
guy gives me hope. Like that big guy.
Did you see
girl?
Did you see that guy?
He turned around and looked. He's like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah. Did you see that? I was like, "Whoa, that was some real hate."
That made me feel good though. I was like, all right, big guy.
Yeah. Did your brain go where my brain went? Where I'm like, hey, he's probably rich.
It's possible. I didn't even go there. I was just like, it just started off with the euphoria of. Because I didn't see, I saw the girl, and I saw the guy look back. He's like, oh, yeah, she's hot. But then I didn't see her with anybody. And then when I saw him, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
He's not even trying.
No, no, no.
He's not even trying.
In my mind, it's like, was he a football player once? Maybe. He wasn't even that big, though. He wasn't big enough to be a football player.
Lucky him, man. He must be doing, he's got to be doing something right.
My hate of like people's successes.
Oh, you hate? Are you a hater?
I don't know.
Dude,
sometimes
you're in the wrong industry, bro.
No, I don't think so. I feel like just my skepticism.
Okay.
Just shoots off.
I think that's part of you being a comic, though.
Yeah. Like I'm just like, oh, like there must be something.
I think you're just questioning. You just
right.
Question like what's going on?
Maybe he like married, like literally all my brain just keeps going down the flow. Like probably married her when he was hot. He looks like he could have been a trap. I wish we could have taken a picture so people on this podcast could have seen.
Well, it's that classic thing where you see somebody that's attractive, you're like, she's with him. But then it's the whole thing like the Patrice O'Neal thing where it's just like women love differently than guys do. We immediately go for, oh, does she look good and this and that? And oh, of course. And I think guy. And then I don't want to. It's always. I mean, we can get into this, but I don't want to shortchange guys. You know, because we can see. You know, of course, that's what we're wired to be. Oh, she's fucking. I want to get on that. But then, I think guys have that capacity. It's just hidden beneath more layers, I think.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I had
We tend to be more shallow.
All right. I have no problem in theory dating somebody I'm not attracted to. Even like if I
don't
like
you have to be attracted to her in some way.
In some way, yes. Like, but my brain is. I'm like I probably could do with it. But my ego and my self esteem needs to be able to have somebody that, like, my friends are like, good for Lucas. Like, I feel like I, like, worry that people are not going to think I'm doing okay.
Oh, and...
you know what I mean?
You like, your friends, like, well, what the fuck is going on with him?
Lucas is not doing good right now.
Because of who you're with?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Maybe you need better friends, Lucas.
No, I feel like that's anybody, though. All right, perfect example. If I saw you with someone that was clinically obese. Okay? Like, you know what I mean? Leaves the house once.
Oh, and she doesn't.
Once a week. You know what I mean? And I got to see you guys out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'd probably be like, all right. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, for talking about extreme aesthetics. Okay. You know, like.
Gotcha.
Where it's like, not. I'm not just saying, oh, man, her face isn't that great. Like, I'm talking about, like.
Gotcha.
Out there. You know what I mean? I'd probably be like, oh, no.
What if I told you, like, she makes me happy, man?
I would go, okay.
And then you'd be like, okay. And then you tweet about...
I write a whole new act about obesity.
I can't believe what Chris is doing. I can't believe what he's...
I don't know. Like, I feel like you're right, but in my mind, I'd be like, there's something... Something clicked. Where, mm-hmm. Now you're caretaking.
Oh man, what do you think about this? I've noticed some things about, and I think it's just sort of like guys just really trying to hook up with chicks, like guys, dudes being feminist. Somebody on Facebook said something where like guys are so, it was a dude, and he said something like, guys are so dumb. It's like, do you have to shit on yourself just to make you know, women like you? Or just to be, like, acceptable.
I'm going to be honest. Have you ever seen anyone who talks like that be successful with women? Because I haven't.
I think you're right.
I think it's just a shot in the dark.
It's like that sneaky shit where like, I'm going to make her like me.
Yeah, like, it's a shot in the dark and it's not real.
Yeah.
It's not, like, a true opinion. It's literally, I feel like, the exact same equivalent of going on an online dating profile mm-hmm. thing and just asking someone to have sex with them first thing.
Yeah. You can, yeah.
Right, you're just hoping it wins.
You can be a nice guy and want to fuck a girl.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. There's no wrong within it, but it's the exact opposite of that. It's just, like, it's too much. It's just too much.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like... Sometimes it's hard. Like, I feel like a lot of times people people's, is it sympathy or empathy? What is it where people try to, there's like a difference between them, but I always get them confused.
Sympathy is where they, like, I feel sorry that your
right.
mom died, or I feel sorry right. that you...
Right. Sympathy is a good characteristic for somebody to have.
Mm-hmm.
Empathy isn't.
I think it is, because that means you're intuitive.
No, I feel right? like, I feel like if you have empathy, you're literally thinking, you're just pitying people. Like, I feel like...
No, sympathy is the, I think, oh, the pity that's, thing. So that was, I think that's sort of synonymous to pity.
Okay.
Like a sympathy card. I feel bad.
Okay, so empathy is good. Wait, I just remember one of them was the one where, like, literally, if you're like, oh, the woman plight, I feel so bad for him. Well, that's not helping women.
Yeah. What are you doing? Like, are you being proactive in right. doing that? Are you behaving in a way that promotes women being respected?
Right.
You know?
And a lot of that times where you go, guys, I get it, ladies. Guys are such pigs.
That sort of thing.
That's sympathy. That's sympathy. That's not...
Well, I know. It's just bullshit.
But that's also... That's what I mean. They're pretending to have sympathy for something that's not a plight that they're going... Like, that they get. Okay.
I see what you're... I get where you're coming from.
Sometimes I feel... All right, so I'm raised by lesbians, for people who don't know that.
I want to get into that. Okay, cool. Right, yeah.
So I'm raised by lesbians, and one of my moms is, like, a director of women's studies and is, like, a extreme, like, FBI watch list feminist, all right? Burning bras feminist. Like, so...
That shaped your view.
It shaped my view, but also sometimes I just think to myself, I'm like... I feel like sometimes I'm just so militant about things. Mm-hmm. And I also just think because I was put in that environment so much, I rebel from it sometimes.
Okay.
A lot. Like, I think about what my parents taught me, and I go, Jesus, after you're done burning that bra, didn't you just have to go buy some more? You know what I mean? Who lost more? You lost more. I don't think you got your message out more. Just ruined a bra.
Unless they just wanted them out, wanted them to hang free.
Right. You didn't need to ruin your bra, though.
That's true.
It's like that kind of stuff. Like, any kind of, like, militant belief system where you're going to do that kind of stuff doesn't really get anything accomplished.
There's just no gray area. There's no nuance. There's no, like, it just almost seems like at some point there's no way to be... I guess changed. Like, there's no way to be influenced. There's no way to evolve.
Right.
If it's just like a staunch, I don't know. Like, I think something that's interesting, like when I was in theater school, when you're performing, if you and I are in a scene together, and I think good acting, one of the elements is to be able to be swayed into another perspective. If I'm coming in with this goal, and then you and I have this thing that I want to achieve in the scene, and you are the key to me getting what I want, I have to persuade you, and then at the same time I also have to be open to take what you're giving me in the scene.
Right.
You know, sort of like. I'm getting too nerdy, but I think reason is a skill. Having reason,
yes.
Having a, you know, you can have a point of view, but you have to be able to see the other side.
I oftentimes think that movements get convoluted with so much stuff too. Mm-hmm. Like, if you make a movement, then all of a sudden now you get people on that bandwagon that aren't necessarily in the movement for the reason you're in the movement. So the mm-hmm. people that created the movement in the beginning are now in this mess of people that are like, oh, that's not what we meant. And I feel like that's like why, like, something like where you just go, we should all just be practicing old school stuff, golden rule.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, instead of being like, I'm a feminist, or, you know what I mean, or I'm a gay and a GLBT supporter, or I'm a, just like, I'm just a golden rule thing. I think everyone should be treated the way you want to be treated.
That's true. Now, what was that like for you to have two, like, a gay mom and a... Two gay moms. My two moms.
Well, it's actually four gay moms.
Four gay moms.
Shit. So when I was eight, they separated, got new partners.
Oh shit.
So I was a divorcee lesbian household guy. So I would go weekends at one place, weekdays at the other, week back and forth like that.
Now, who had the most? Did you come out? Did you know your dad? Talk about that, because we were talking about this last week. All right, how did that happen?
So my parents chose a sperm donor that was like one of their friends.
Okay.
And he is still like one of their friends.
Do you know who he is?
I've met him a couple times.
What's that been like?
The last time I talked with him, I was probably 13, 14. And to be honest, I was not interested, really.
Okay. Have you ever tried to...
I've thought about it now, but now it's like...
It's not too late.
It's not too late, but it is kind of like...
What's the point?
What do I want from it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do I want from getting to know him?
Do you want to know why he wasn't a part of your life? Was he a part of your life?
Well, I know that he wasn't a part of my life because that wasn't the point of him.
He was just the...
Right.
The dick you came in on.
Right, exactly.
All
right. You know what I mean? Like, I know why he wasn't part of my life.
Yeah. So you don't... What was that reason? Because that's what your moms wanted?
Well, for one, I think it might have been a little different if my mom didn't find herself a tenure track professorship. Like, when you're a tenured professor, like, trying to become a tenured professor, any school that basically will take you, you will jump on.
Okay.
Like, you're like, hey, I'm gonna have job security for the rest of my life.
Well, how does that relate? Like, so did she have you before that?
All right,
or
so,
after? How did
so
that-
she had me she just got her LSAT, so she just got became a lawyer.
Okay.
And then was like, I'm going back to school.
How old was she?
33, maybe.
Okay.
31.
All right.
Okay, and so then she went back to school, was there for 3 years, while being an adjunct professor at school for 3 years. Then...
Adjunct is the lowest on the totem pole,
Totem pole, okay. And oftentimes you don't have your PhD yet.
Okay.
But you're qualified to teach.
And was she teaching women's studies?
She was teaching law, sociology of law.
Okay.
And so then she got a degree, and then she got her degree, and then she just started sending resumes out to anywhere that needed a law professor.
No, this is in Wyoming.
And so my mom, no, this is in Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo, New York, okay.
So then you get a yes, you take it.
Okay. Was this at the University of Buffalo?
She went to school at University of Buffalo.
Okay.
And then the school in Wyoming is University of Wyoming.
Okay. The Cowboys, right?
Boy, howdy.
Yes. I want to talk about that later, but go into... So she's in her 30s, early 30s, and and then she decides she wants to have a kid.
Right.
With her partner?
With her, like, longer-term partner.
Okay, were they in... So they were in Buffalo, then she gets the gig in Wyoming.
Right.
Okay.
And you just go.
Right.
Because... When you're raising a kid, you don't want to be making $30,000 a year as an adjunct.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can make, you know what I mean? You can make a really good living.
The cat's pajamas is the tenure track.
Yes. Right. It's the dream.
Right.
If you're a professor, getting a tenure track is like, you made it.
Okay.
And you walk on eggshells for like 5 years, 6 years or something like that. And then you get it. And then you're like, 20 more years. I'm just going to keep on getting raises, and I can't even get fired.
And what was she... did she move on from sociology of law to...
So my mom became an activist.
Okay.
Kind of in Wyoming.
What do you become an activist of in Wyoming? Because when I think of that, I think of beautiful countryside, and then maybe you guys have a Walmart.
Right. That's it. You nailed it. You nailed exactly what it is.
If you're lucky, as Sonic somewhere.
Right. Wage gap is what was her thing.
Huge wage gap.
Women-male wage gap is unbelievably atrocious.
Were there migrant workers out there, too?
Migrant workers, too. I'm sure even the women in those were even less in those.
Uh-huh.
But it, it, most places, the wage gap is like, whatever, 10 cents to 20 cents to the dollar or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wyoming, it was like 40 cents. Wow. So, like, people would be doing the same job, getting paid.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So, like, she went around as a sociologist and got all these women, like, wage gap studies taken, all, like a $1 million study.
Okay.
And then got these things passed, so, like, the fight wage gap.
And how was she successful?
And she was successful at
That's awesome. Didn't she... God, I'm going to want to jump. Let's not jump yet. And then you came around.
Well, I was already around.
Oh, you were already around.
I was six or seven when I moved to...
Oh, okay. So you were born in Buffalo.
So I was born in Buffalo in the black neighborhoods.
Huh.
Because that's where poor adjunct professors live, right? So all my friends were black.
Okay.
Everybody.
Oh, so that's why you got into hip hop?
Exactly.
Okay.
And also,
what are we talking, like the mid 90s? Early to mid 90s?
Exactly, yeah. 90s. I moved in 93.
So if you were in 93, I was 13, you were 6 or 7.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm in Buffalo, New York. I'm in the all black schools. I have all black friends. And so I moved to Wyoming, and I have a speech impediment.
Oh.
Which I always had. And I
Well, the black kids would have made fun of you more than the white kids, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So you were battle-tested.
Yes, exactly. Okay. So
that shit didn't really bother you.
No, it didn't really bother... The only thing that bothered me was when I actually couldn't say the word.
Okay.
That was more frustrating than me. My self-hate... is way more than anyone else's.
So you heard month. You had heard it all before. You just yeah. had to. You were just like yes. getting over the actual.
Right.
What do you call it? You can't call it a handicap. You call it a stumbling block.
Yeah,
a
it's block. A disadvantage.
A
or
disadvantage.
Something.
Okay.
And so
I got really Michael Scott there. Hey, handicap. Such a douche.
All right.
I'm sorry.
My speech impediment's a disability. Oh, God. I wish I could get the thing for my car. Just park anywhere I want.
Don't park, it's fine.
Why do you have that? I sometimes mumble.
We had a kid that used to stutter. We weren't too cool with him. I mean, I got in a fight with him once. Not because he stuttered, because he was an asshole.
See, that's the thing, is that... All right, So my sperm donor, Lenny, he has a stutter.
Oh, okay.
And I always kind of, like, felt like that was, like, as a guy that had to hang out with people in speech therapy,
mm-hmm.
it's like, I don't want to talk with this guy. I feel like that was part of my brain, where it was like, I don't want to deal with this.
With that guy? Or just, like, the...
The dealing with me calling this guy on a regular basis and him stuttering on the phone and stuff. I didn't want to...
Fuck, you're looking at yourself in the future.
Right, and I didn't have a stutter. I had my R's and the W's and stuff. Like,
so give me an example. Awa?
Yeah, exactly. You just named it. Okay. I made sometimes L's and the W's. So I'd be like, Wukus, Wine, Wicks, Wemma, Wine, Walways, Wusses, We.
What the fuck was that?
Lusciously?
Lusciously?
Okay. Lusciously?
Okay, got it.
Lusciously.
My cousin used to say, when instead of saying yellow, he would say lello.
Right, so yeah. It was just weird. Like, sometimes you're like, why are you.
And yeah.
It wasn't like even a normal speech pathology thing.
Right.
But when I moved to Wyoming after at 7, I went in there and I was in speech pathology, and they walk out of the. The, like, speech pathologist walks out and talks to my mom and goes, hey, Lucas has a really ebonic twang.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want him to keep that? And then they trained it out of me.
They got the black ebonic stuff. I've heard of people... I don't know if you... Do you know Beth Hoyt? Anyway, I have Beth Hoyt, comedian, actress. She... You always hear people... All right. Well, see, that's one thing about New York City. When people drive like that on this little motorcycle, that he's in the small confines of Orchard Street. Like, what are you trying to prove?
I don't know.
You don't have anywhere to really let that out unless you're on the FDR or the West Side Highway.
Yeah. All right.
It's a dumb toy.
Yeah. Anyway, where was I? You hear people when you go to, like, in my case, when you go to theater school or you're training to be a performer, you get your regional dialect taken out of you. But that's funny. They just said Ebonics.
So that's what I'm trying to, like, I was trying to get to that, the end of that story, was that's what Wyoming's like.
Let's get this out of you.
It just goes, this is going to make you feel a little weird. We all are right, boy. Howdy, how y'all doing?
You know, more like, you okay?
And you can hear it a little bit because I have a little bit of drawl now, but I also have like, I sound weird.
You just sound normal.
Yeah, I sound like a newscaster, I feel like.
Or like a standard American.
Yeah, I feel like a newscaster that's a little drunk.
Like a little bit of Champ Kind, maybe?
Yeah, I'm just like, that's Justin.
I mean, I think everybody has that. When you talk, when I go home, I'm sure that, you know, you the different local commercials, people sound, you know, different. I have a drawl. Everybody has. Yeah. I think, well, you know, depending on where you're from.
Wow. I just wish I was black.
You wish you were black? No, I wish you don't,
I, cadence-wise. I just wish I had that old, like, oh, man, I watch, like, anytime I hear, like, some kind of black monologue, I'm always just like, oh, that's so good.
I hope it's not from a Tyler Perry.
Oh, man, I've watched every day, wake up, watch a new Tyler Perry movie. You know, are there monologues in Tyler Perry movies?
Well, just like, you got to turn to Jesus. It's just bullshit. Like, just some light-skinned guy helping getting a black woman away from a dark-skinned guy that's ruining her life.
I've never seen one of them.
You're not missing anything.
I know. I want to go, but I feel like the best place to see him is like in a theater on the
see Tyler.
I want to go see
those movies.
I want to go see a Tyler Perry. I want to do it once. I want to go to a Tyler Perry movie week night of release,
the opening weekend.
I want to see what it feels like.
I've never done it, so I can't tell.
Especially for me. Yeah. You know what I mean? Well, my pale white face and the whole black crowd, probably.
Well, like, Mitch Hedberg had that like a bluesy, jazzy kind of cadence.
He's from Florida, so that's where I started doing comedy. Is in Florida.
Wait, I'm not done with. I'm not done with. Okay, so we're in Wyoming. About your speech, you're in Wyoming.
Yeah.
What is that like? I mean, so you got the two lesbian thing.
Okay.
Yeah, you got that. You got them being activists. Didn't she? She ran for office, right?
Recently. So what happened is I had to.
And talk about the transition from being in an urban, like speak on like the like
right.
urban area of being in Buffalo to just the quiet bleakness. Was that like Laramie, Wyoming?
Yeah. So Laramie, Wyoming is beautiful, but I feel like the difference was like, God, I wasn't used to going on road trips. We never went on
road trips.
In Wyoming, you have to. Like, so like we would go probably every 2 months.
We need toothpaste.
Like, kinda. Like it would be like you have to drive to the supermarket.
How far was it from like your. You're just like your stop and shop or your path.
Three miles or
that's not
four
bad.
Miles.
Okay, that's not bad.
It's not bad, but you still had to jump in a car.
Yeah,
and then that's not.
Well, of course, it's not like here where you have to go. You go to what Sea Town or some shit.
I don't. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You just carry four bags home.
What about the movies? Like, what was that like? An hour away.
The thing is, like, Laramie, Wyoming is very self-sustained because it's the college town.
Was that in Laramie?
So yeah, so the college.
Yes. Okay.
So we have a movie theater. We have a Kmart. We have a Safeway. We have a Walmart. Okay. We have a. You know, we got the Applebee's.
Anywhere USA type shit.
Yes, we got the Applebee's, but you know what I mean? We don't have a Best Buy. We don't have, like, the, like.
Whoa.
Like, we don't have any of those things. We don't have anything that's specific. So, no Whole Foods, no Best Buys, no. Yeah.
Sure.
nothing like that. Maybe like a Radio Shack, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of how my undergrad was. I was in a small town, Emmitsburg, Maryland, and it was to go to the mall. Like, if you wanted to go to the mall or to the movies, it was 25 miles away.
See, that's farther than us. Like, okay. We had a movie theater in... We had two movie theaters.
Wow. But I'm jealous already.
But I'm going to say this. It's because it's a college town.
Yeah, yeah. How big is that university?
Huge. Huge.
Are we talking 20 Gs? 20,000?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's almost half the population.
Jesus, Deb. Okay, yeah.
If you think of, like, the people who work at that school...
Mm-hmm.
And the people that are going to that school.
They employ the whole town.
Yeah. I think the population was like 36,000. When I was there, it was like 36,000 people.
Wow.
And so, and then like 18, I think 18 were students. 18,000 were students.
That's insane. Yeah. I'm small liberal arts guy.
So we have like the best pharmacology school in the country.
Okay. I think.
Or like one of the top ones.
Is everybody on drugs out there?
So
is that like...
Yes.
Because it seems like it's nothing to do, so people just...
You do so much drugs.
Yeah.
Like, I got sober at 18 years old.
Jesus.
So, you know...
And you started what, like 13?
Exactly.
Because it's just
13,
like...
13, you know what I mean, by 14.
StarCraft wasn't enough, huh?
Exactly, dude.
Shit, dude.
We did Halo. That was by that time...
Okay, you're old enough for that, yeah.
So we started doing Halo parties where we would smoke weed and drink and play. We'd have four TVs and everyone would be in a different room.
Okay. Wow, I mean, that's... Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's what happens, like, in the, I guess, flyover states. And then Laramie, Wyoming... What's the capital of Wyoming?
Casper. Casper.
Okay. Laramie, Wyoming was where Matthew Shepard was murdered. Hate crime. It was a gay... Give people the background.
All right. So what happened in Laramie when I'm living there at this time with my mom's, and Matthew Shepard happens, and it's in... God, I can't remember what year. Maybe 1999 or 2000. Something like that. Sounds right?
Yeah.
And Bill Clinton's in president. Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Okay.
And this gay kid who had a drug problem.
Oh, I didn't even know that. They didn't even bring that up.
They never do. It convolutes the story.
He still shouldn't have died. He shouldn't have been murdered.
Right, exactly. But it convolutes the... convolutes the story, kind of.
Yeah, because then they eventually made a, for the listeners that don't know, they made a play about it and a movie. Your mom was one of the characters in it.
Right? She now has, in the new version, it says the most words. So if you get her character, that's a pretty good role.
My undergrad did it, and I think they did it after I left, and which was interesting because it was a... Christian Catholic school.
Yeah.
And my theater conservatory did it too. Yeah.
There's two characters in the thing that are just like, if you can nail them, you can get like a scholarship to any school. They're like really great monologues.
Okay.
So like, if you can get them, it's like...
Is your mom one of them?
I don't...
One of the monologues?
Everyone does basically a monologue in the play.
Mm-hmm.
But,
because it's like one of those direct address.
Yes.
Like, it's just like, I'm Billy Jones, and this is...
Right, exactly. But no, it's one about a gay kid.
Uh-huh.
That's the one. That's like in theater, and his dad hating him. Like, that's the one.
Okay.
So like a straight kid will do that.
I'm
going to play a gay guy, and it's a super sad monologue, and it's just like, oh, get him in here.
I remember
Juilliard, hello.
Hello, Juilliard. I'm gay. Get me into every school.
Right.
I auditioned for this show, the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. It was on Broadway, and there was a part, it was a role where if you got cast as one guy, you had to play another one. So like, there's one, like when the kids lose, they lose their spelling bee, like they get eliminated. It's a comfort counselor who's just a an ex-con who's kind of quirky. He has this really cool song, and then that same guy would play like one of the characters' gay dad. And so they would never, I got a call back to that play, to that show, and they would never let me do the gay part. But all the effeminate looking guys would get to do it. But I think they eventually just cast a guy that wasn't gay or whatever. But he, the best man got the part.
Right.
But yeah. Anyway, go. All right.
So, gay guy gets, goes in a bar. Two guys come up to him. They hit on him. They go and they go, let's go out and do, maybe have sex or some implication of let's go do something.
Yeah.
Them being straight, them knowing he's gay.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go and they pull him out and they proceed to rob him.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all high and they're all, who knows the like caliber of their, like how much hate was in them.
Sure.
We don't really know, but you know, we do know that they flirted with them to make him come with them.
Right.
So then they take him and they beat him and then they tie him up on a fence and then they leave him there.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a difference between, like, if you just beat somebody up and then you go, oops.
Yeah.
Too much beat. We beat them up too much and then you just drop them at the hospital.
They knew what the fuck they were doing.
Right. They just dropped them off there. And, or they, you know what I mean? Maybe they thought that someone was going to find them, but, like, that's delusional.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's, like, a lots of stories about being in Laramie about, like, people just driving to work and just thinking it's a scarecrow for, like, a while.
Mm. How long was he out there?
A night?
Jesus, man.
So, then he's on respirators, and literally, it became a news frenzy. Because he's a pretty gay guy. He's a pretty nice gay guy in the middle of a 32,000, at that time, probably.
Was he a student at the school?
Student.
Yeah.
At the school, and it just became huge, and then he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the vigils came, and then all the Flip, what's it, the Schultz? Well, no, not Flip Schultz. Flip Schultz is a comedian in L.A. Philip. Hey, give it up. Hey, you know, Flip's a great comic. has nothing to do with the Phelps church. You know, those guys, the guy. The
Phelps,
the I Hate Fags guy.
Fuck.
You know who I'm talking about? He goes to all the things, and he goes, like people's son will die in outer space.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll go protest there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, everywhere he goes, he just is like...
Fuck, don't they... Oh, my God. Didn't that church just...
He just died.
I hate when I can't... Yeah.
He just died, and there's...
What the fuck?
Oh, man, there's an amazing sign where people were outside of his funeral with signs, and it was literally... It was I'm sorry for your loss. It was so... touching.
I hate when I can't.
It's the Southern Baptist, something like that.
Fuck.
Westboro
Baptist Church.
Boom.
All right, thank God. I hate when I
all right.
You would have got a Facebook message.
Three in the morning.
Hey, man.
We figured it out.
Bro.
So those guys come.
Yeah.
All the news and out all the country.
Mm-hmm.
President Clinton does a speech.
Yeah.
Wishing everybody the thing. Because it became such a hubbaloo of a thing. Because Wyoming is called the Equality State.
Mm, I didn't know that. Okay.
That's like, you know, sunshine. Like, we're the Equality State because we let women vote first.
Okay.
You know, and so being equality. And in the Equality State, we're committing brutal hate crimes.
Right.
So those guys get arrested for the murders.
Mm-hmm.
And they get put on trial. And my mom is one of the few openly gay employees of the state. There's not very many. Then and she's a law professor.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a double whammy. So she took every one of her students to every court hearing. So she went to the court and fought for it, I'm sure, and was like, hey, my kids are never going to see a murder trial this of this caliber ever.
And she's still teaching law?
Now, women's studies? Years later, she started teaching women's studies things, uh-huh. and then tried to go back, and I don't know what happened, but they did not like her. They didn't want her back. And okay. I remember my mom thinking it was really hurtful.
Mm-hmm. Now, did she undertake any risks by being, out? Because it had to take some kind of courage and some kind of,
She definitely took up public scrutiny. Mm-hmm. There was a bomb threat at her, in one of her classes.
Bomb threat at one of her classes?
Like one of her huge lectures that had, 200 people. For a while there, I wasn't coming home from school by myself for a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was staying over at friends.
Just to be safe?
Just for a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I just didn't know. You know what I mean? It was so stressful for them. And I remember, and this is how I always knew probably I wanted to be in showbiz, is I was just mad that I never got talked to. Dude, I think my voice in that play would have been a very interesting one. But you know what? Whatever.
Do you talk about any of this on stage?
I do. I talk about my mom being raised by lesbians. I really stay away from Matthew Shepard because you can't. The backstory of it takes too long and it's too fun. It's too upsetting.
Because I knew about him. I was maybe 19, 20 when that happened. And then I think around the Boys Don't Cry time? Was that that was a true story too, right?
Yes.
That happened in, what region is Wyoming? What do you call that? It's not the Pacific Northwest. It's more is it just the Midwest?
It's the Midwest. It's the just real, literally it's the legitimately Midwest.
Not like Chicago.
Right.
It's the Midwest.
Boom. Right in the middle. No one knows where it is.
Like the
if you take away all the names.
Uh-huh.
No.
I don't know if I could find it either.
They point at Colorado, the Montana. They might get it right. But
where is it? Where does it border on?
Montana. It's connected by five states, I think.
Is it Nebraska in there too?
I don't think so. Montana, Colorado, Wisconsin, maybe?
No. Is Wisconsin really?
Think so. Uh-huh. What's the what? We can Google this.
My phone's not on.
It's a huge, huge state.
I believe.
So I've never been to the other side.
Okay. Wow.
But that's how big it is. It takes, from our place, it took 8 to 9 hours to get to Yellowstone.
Okay, Yellowstone National Park. Right.
But that's 9 hours of driving at 80 miles an hour.
That's the what the speed limit is, isn't it?
Oh, it's probably far more than that. Some places. Jesus
Christ. Wow. So, you were dealing with all that. Now, you got me thinking, this is just me, you got me thinking about the Boys Don't Cry thing. Where did that happen? Do you know?
I have no idea. But yeah.
So trying to, you're the encyclopedia
of homophobia.
young gay people get murdered.
Yeah.
We'll edit that out. So dealing with all of that, your mom being involved in all this scrutiny, being an activist. How does that make you feel as a kid? Are you just you did mention you just wanted to be in show business, but was there I gotta get the fuck out of here?
There was in my mind
when it came time to go to college, because you could have went to Wyoming for free. I'm assuming, right?
And I did go to free.
Okay,
or almost free.
Okay. You didn't finish there, did you? You went to school down in
Florida. Yeah, I went to school in Florida.
Do 2 years?
What I did is I first moment of me being out of the house without supervision and curfew and no rules, my drug problem escalated so fast.
But then you got sober at 18, so was it just and then you just stopped?
It was I graduated early.
High school?
High school early.
Okay.
So I was taking community college when I was 17. Right when I turned 18, I was in university.
Gotcha.
So I was in.
Just partying. Nothing.
Just partying.
So you weren't involved in any activities in high school? Or you just?
I was. In high school, I guess for the first semester of regular high school, I was in choir.
Okay.
But then they were treating me, this is the thing about everywhere right now, people who are put in the special ed field.
Was that what you were in?
Yeah, right. Okay. They just dumb you down, and you go in these stupid people classes, and you're with all these idiots, and you're not,
you don't really belong there.
I'm like, I'm not that. I'm like, I might need a little longer on a test,
mm-hmm.
especially if there's written essays.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I mean, I need probably 20 more minutes than everybody else.
Yeah.
I don't need 2 hours, but I need 20 minutes.
Sure. Like, that had to be frustrating.
And that, right? But, like... That's
what did your mom say, like, as an educator? Like, she said, yeah, my son shouldn't be in this class, or was it just like...
Well, my mom...
Was she too busy fighting the good fight?
I feel like this is the thing. My mom...
Instead of not taking care of you? Because it seems like most people, most parents who are activists like that, who are very involved, their kids kind of get pushed to the wayside a little
bit. See, I feel like that... I was her the main... See, I think the issues that involved me were the issues she were fighting.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Like, now she's a politician.
Mm-hmm. What is she, like, state level?
She's a state representative of Wyoming, and she'll be probably...
What's her name?
Catherine Connolly.
Okay.
And she will be probably, whatever, the head chair of the Democrats.
Nice.
And so...
Do you get carte blanche when you go visit her?
I've done that, and I never want to do it ever again.
What does that include? What did that...
Going to oil meeting, like, oil dinners.
Okay, and like steaks.
Steaks, and it's not even that good, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was cool, like, they gave you, like, these desserts that are, like, in chocolate trucks, but it's like... I was like, this is made out of chocolate? This is cool. Yeah. But...
Other than that, it's just...
Yeah.
Boring.
It's boring. I like... I'm like a kind of a little bit of a foodie now that I'm sober for so long.
Okay.
It's like, what else do you do? You know?
Yeah.
I like my steaks that are like aged for like 40 years.
Who makes the best steak in New York City? Ooh. I've heard Keen's. I've heard Smith and Walensky's.
God, I went to a play. You know what? I went with one person once and I was like, this is it. And I can't remember what it was.
I think if I start get a good job, like in show business, I would go to one of those places. Or after I got a check from doing a TV spot, I would go to one of those places.
Yeah, I really like the steak. To me, is like great, but like to me, the best kind of stuff is like fancy like Asian fusion that's like price fixed.
Okay.
So like they'll like have like a black truffle. A soup dumpling.
That's like some elitist, like...
Yeah.
This is why they hate us. David Cross had a bit... What was it? Like the... Yeah. Oh, shit. This isn't funny. Whatever the... I think it came around, like, 2001, 2002, and he was just talking about, like, having, like, sprinkled gold on his...
Yes!
Like, fucking Eyes Wide Shut of food.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I love that kind of stuff. Okay. Where it's, like, different things.
Is it super expensive?
Yes.
Okay.
And my only person I ever do it with is my mom, really.
Aren't you, like, a chef, though? What is your Facebook thing?
I was a chef.
What do you do when you're not doing stand-up?
I was a chef, and now I am a night... I'm a manager at a halfway house.
Wow. Okay.
So
you do have some of your mom in you.
Oh yes.
So you're actually doing shit. That's good, man.
Yeah. So like I know I am like I was in food service for a really long time, but being not the head chef is so frustrating. And I would make good things and show it to the head chef, and they would always be like, "This is great." I'm like, so?
So you're gonna.
And then be like, yeah, we'll talk about it.
I saw elements of that in that movie, The 5-Year Engagement. Like, they kind of touched on... Did you see that?
What was it?
What's the guy that's in the bad movie with Cameron Diaz now? Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
What was that movie that Cameron Diaz was... Like, it was a bad movie that Cameron Diaz was in? I'm like, ugh, like, all of them?
I think it's like... an updated version of Zach and Miri Make a Porno.
Oh,
like a spin off of that.
It is. I know exactly
Fred,
what
Fred. He was
on Armisen.
No. Shit, this podcast is becoming us.
Me and you.
Names. Jason Segel.
Oh, yep.
He played a chef, and his wife got into a PhD. They were in Cali. I think they were in San Francisco, and he was a chef at this restaurant. He was up and coming, and I guess he was like, what do you call it? An apprentice of some kind?
Yeah.
And then
yeah, it's like a sous maybe or something. Okay. Right.
And then they got engaged. She got an offer to study at the University of Michigan in a PhD program. So he left that gig that he had to be with her. And then he was like relegated to working at this sandwich
shop. I saw this movie. I saw it. I did. And he was mad and he was angry about it.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt a little bit. But I also just was like.
But then let me see how you feel about this. Because it just seems recently, like, there's these movies that kind of give you these white boys that are frustrated with their life. And then they open up a food truck business, and then life changes for the better.
Yeah.
Where's your food truck? Is comedy your food truck?
Yeah.
Okay, but we'll get back to you being frustrated. Go.
Yeah. I know what it is. I would love, like, I'm a Renaissance man. I paint. I produced music before. I played in bands before. I've done stand up. I did a little bit of acting. Okay. I've done everything. But like what I love about comedy more than I like about other things is it's a little more fair.
Okay, just like StarCraft.
Right.
Full circle. What the fuck, man? You don't get that on every podcast. Right?
Good night. That's it. But that's how I feel. I feel I like fairness. I get my defiance, my and that's probably from my parents. I don't like injustice.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like seeing. You rarely see somebody in comedy making it who isn't. Who can't do their job. You might not like what they do,
mm-hmm.
but you know they're doing their job. Mm-hmm. You might not love Ralphie May or Larry the Cable Guy, but you know they're doing their job.
So it's just like a taste thing. It is all subjective, yeah.
Yes, but you know they're doing their job. You watch the audience, you're like, okay, this guy's crushing.
You're laughing, he's doing what he's supposed to, he or she is doing what they're
right. Yeah. Like, there's rarely a person that you're like, this is garbage.
Well, I would always say, I would counter with show business. Granted, a lot of times if you work hard, sometimes you don't get the brass ring or something.
Sure.
Making it is subjective, just like what's good and what's appreciated and lauded is the same. Like, I think, now you got me thinking, what do you got me thinking about? I always say show business doesn't owe you shit. Like, you could have a good audition, you could have a good showcase and still not book the festival or whatever. But then there's other people that you may think may not be as good as you, but
sure.
I think for the most part there is a meritocracy too, where
yes.
It is like,
this is the thing. There very rarely is anyone in show business that isn't doing their job right. They're working their ass off usually. They're doing the thing. You know what I mean? There's very, very, very rare stories about people getting super lucky. And if they do get lucky, then they don't consistently pull it off.
That's, you're making sense, but like, it's just the devil's advocate in me is just sort of like.
Oh, but no, I'm talking about every other field I just mentioned, though.
That's true.
I mean, all the other arts, dude. Dude, you have to, you can be working in a restaurant for a long time, and if you don't have a friend, it's a friend of a critic that doesn't come into your store, and then you nail that, and then you also have to nail that.
Well, that's almost like every. I think every industry is like that in a certain way. Like corporate America is like, oh yeah, this person has a talent, but I know that guy. Like, I would probably pick you over somebody that I didn't. Like, if I kind of, like before we did this, we did like one or two shows together.
Right.
I think I met you at Little Skips.
Yeah.
Like maybe
great show.
Great show. I think that might have been, if it wasn't December, it was like in March.
Right.
And it was just like, okay. And then I met you and we talked. And said, oh, I would probably pick you to do a show with me as opposed to somebody that I didn't know.
Right.
You know, it'd be like, oh, I know Lucas.
Yeah, all exactly.
Right, do the show.
Right. But you wouldn't, I don't know, would you have chosen me if you knew me and it wasn't funny?
Probably not.
And that's the what I like. You know what I mean?
But
like,
if you had more Twitter followers, if I knew you could get in. There's always like, what if this guy, I don't think he's that funny, but he's got 30,000 Twitter followers. And I know at least maybe 100 of them will show up to this show.
A real pro sex steps, huh?
I'm just saying. What I mean? It might, you never know.
Like that kind of thing where you're like, you have 100,000 followers and you're nobody yet.
I think that's how clubs, sometimes people say clubs book that way. But then at the same time, let's see, you see certain people that do the all of the clubs, and then you hear people say, he's not that funny, he's not funny. And I think maybe they give you, I've heard podcasts where like the Wiley veterans will say, yeah, you might get a shot. Like you, if you hit with something, you can't tour with the same material for every like 2 years straight. You got to give them something back because they might come for you one time, but if you suck, they're not gonna come back.
There's an argument to that because I opened for this guy Eric Myers. Right?
I know Eric.
Right?
He's in L.A. now. I only did one show with him.
But he is the best road comedian of maybe all time.
I know he's really good.
The guy, just for being a guy that opened for him on a regular basis.
Okay.
Standing ovations on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. That, for a guy that no one knows, that's unbelievable. But you know what he's also been doing? That same act for 5 years.
He does the same act?
Same act almost. Maybe throws in 2 new jokes, 3 new jokes, maybe. But they don't care because they want the performance. Pablo Francisco, exact same story. It doesn't matter, Pablo.
That's a movie guy, right? Movie voice.
Yeah, he does all the characters and stuff. Yeah. It's about if you're gonna do that, you gotta make it a show. And if you make it a show, you're fine. It's so cool. It's such an interesting thing because people say that, but then you look at Eric and you go, people will bring their friends back, laugh the exact same harder at the exact same jokes. They don't care. They have no care.
That makes sense. That makes sense too. I think that's why I think it's all relative, really.
Yeah.
If those guys are selling tickets and people keep coming back and they keep buying food and liquor, then
exactly. But he's thing about like show business being so forgiving and so great to people.
Robert Downey Jr.
Right. Again, it's just like if you're undeniably talented, like he is. Doesn't matter if you don't show up to your last Comic Standing audition. You know, it doesn't matter if you don't do this. Doesn't matter to do this because they will just keep giving you stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Till they make you something.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about that's. And he's the one who like enforced that fairness. Like comedy is very fair. Because if you crush that hard, you get everything. He's the fastest growing comic they say in LA.
Eric?
Yeah.
Well, I thought he had the. I'm gonna turn this into an Eric. I just know about him on the periphery.
Right.
But I know he had some problems and he rose above those problems.
Yes.
And now he's doing really well. Like the stuff that held him back once he let go of all that, now he's doing really well.
Right. He's the king.
Yeah.
But that's cool. But that's great. And that's what I like about it. But man, I paint and I'm good at it. I'm really good at it. Can't get myself in a gallery, can't make $1 million off of it, doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Because I don't know. I'm not willing to go and hang out at a martini mixer and laugh at the guys. I don't, you know what I mean? And hopefully I laugh at the right time. You know what I mean?
It's a constant struggle. I mean, I remember listening to Bill Burr on, it was either Tom Rhodes or Greg Fitzsimmons' podcast, where he went to a comic, like a veteran comic, that and Bill was saying something like, yeah, you know, I'm just not that good at networking. And then the veteran comic said, well, you better get good at it. Like, it's part of it. Like, much as we hate it, I get into those self-righteous modes where I'm just like, I'm a comic and I'm funny and my material is what is going to be. That's all I have. But then you do, I can't be an asshole about it. I do have to go to these shows. And I struggle with that, too. I mean, but you can't just be J.D. Salinger. Like, J.D. Salinger put out Catcher in the Rye before he became a recluse. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, that's so cool.
You know what I'm saying? So he had, he at least had that. I have this podcast.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know what I mean? Like you still have to, you got to do the dance a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's fair.
Right. I understand. Yeah.
I make points, but the thing is, we're only looking from our own perspectives.
It is. I think it's more StarCraft than it is like maybe like
poker, Texas.
Yeah. Well, because it's like you have the performance, and if the performance is undeniable, they have to let you in.
Right. It's like chess. That's what I like about it. It's like chess and StarCraft. All those things are like legitimately the best person wins.
There's more absolutism.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, there is a percentage of, like, you pulled white instead of black in chess where, like, you have, like, a 2% chance of being winning.
Yeah.
Over it, someone else or something. It's, like, very... And same with, like, I guess that's probably how StarCraft is. There's probably, like, a 2% chance.
Gotcha.
Where it's, like, a little bit luck. But, like, I feel like most of fields, it's like Texas Hold'em.
Mm-hmm.
You're betting, you're putting it on your face, you're putting it on your poker, but you know what? If you keep on getting shitty hands, you don't get shit. Mm-hmm. You know, like, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how skilled you are, you can just get bad hands.
And there you have it. I think we did it. I think that's it. Lucas, you got anything to plug? This will go up probably Sunday or Monday.
You guys can follow me at Lovable Lucas on Twitter.
Okay, shows coming up.
I have
just your tweets and your website.
Yeah, you know what? You can check me out there, and I put up everything on there. That's my home base.
Lucas, this was great, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, take it easy, everybody.